break. It's a mini episode.
Hello and welcome to another mini-soda. You gotta check this out with Mike and Dre. I'm the Mike, and this week we bond with Ryan over Babylon 5 and working on neural nets. Then we go into a longer discussion on how different sci-fi properties handle prequel movies. All that before the usual outtake buffoonery. I'll see you on the other side.
This is becoming a running theme, which I love on this show, the You Gotta Check This Out show, of we have a guest on, and as we're doing the intro, you say a bunch of stuff that's, oh my God, that would be huge to talk about. The 3D animation, the graphics, I did computer graphics as my graduate school work, and I worked on neural nets to teach computers to detect faces.
Yep, computer vision.
Computer vision. When you started saying that and the timeline, because that would have been near me, I was like, oh my God, we could stay here all night. And then like previous shows, I'm like, but we got to go talk about the lizard person. Anything else on like your and Mike's interaction and your and Mike's interaction with Babylon 5? Because that was one of the things you've mentioned. It was your white whale. I think Mike even said to me, he's tried a few times. Oh, you were interested. Are you going further? So is there anything more to that story either of you wants to share?
Well, for me, I've said it many times in this podcast, like I had one person who got me into Babylon 5. That was Carl Wolf. So my whole viewing of the series in the first run was very scattered. I didn't even start watching until they were into the fourth season. And I was doing a lot of reading recaps that were printed out to me because I couldn't even get most of the past episodes for it. So this whole experiment for me has been just getting back into it. And my biggest surprise, because I was warned so many times about season one myself, I loved season one going through it. And I kind of liked the campiness of it. Hey, let's dress up and throw on a play kind of quality to it that I felt. But yeah, it's like when we got to season three and four, it was one of my favorite written shows. But you also hear a lot about that. So I'm not surprised that, Ryan, you dropped off a few episodes into season two and never really thought of going back.
Well, like Star Trek Next Generation has some of the same challenge where people are like, you got to start with season three. That's where the writing really finds its maturity and finds its growth. Unfortunately, I'm a purist, and it means I have to go back in and I have to re-endure it. And it's, I just can't seem to get past that first season hump. I've tried Farscape was another one I tried, and I couldn't connect with that one. Stargate was another one. There was a bunch of these sci-fi shows that were kind of coming around this era, and you're like, ah, this is going to fizzle out. And then they just kept going and going and going for quite some time, especially Stargate that just didn't quit. And Babylon 5 had all the TV movies that they kept pushing out for quite some time. And I've even heard, you know, whatever, continued rumors of another Babylon thing popping back up here and there every now and again.
It's always, they've done a couple of like other movies and the cartoon movie a couple of years ago that I haven't seen. But yeah, I'd be interested because you'd mentioned a lot of stuff that bounced off you. What are a couple of your touch points that have kind of stuck with you over time, that either series, fantasy, sci-fi, anything that you've really gotten into?
So I'm usually a one and done type of show, so I don't tend to rewatch too much. So to your point about seeing Babylon 5 on season 4 or 5 and needing to do recaps, I generally did all of Star Trek TNG when it was coming out. So chasing those episodes on Saturday at 5 or 6 o'clock here was a real rough time, especially as I got older. And when DS9 came out, I couldn't keep up with that show. And so I caught a bunch of it later on in the show. But actually, it wasn't until I was having my first and then second child that I managed to get through all of DS9, Voyager, and Enterprise through those. That was when I got through on those watchings.
I got to briefly stay there on that. I would say you're a nice middle ground in terms of people we've had on the show, because we've had Star Trek purists who have seen like no Babylon 5. We just had my brother on who's seen all of both. You have seen enough of Babylon 5 and now a movie that explains sort of a bunch of stuff. We'll get to that. And Deep Space Nine. Any kind of thoughts about the two next to each other? Obviously, we're able to get through all of Deep Space Nine, so you know that's a comment in its favor versus Babylon 5.
Yeah, it's going to be difficult to compare DS9 to this show. I mean, I literally had some of my notes that were in there. Just the set production levels are probably not even comparable. I'm not even going to ignore the special effects, right? There's a scene in this movie, and I don't remember all her characters. The lady, I'm looking for my notes, she's like the sister of the pilot guy.
Oh, Susan Ivanova, yeah.
Susan, right? So she shows up, of course, in the TV series, But they walk into this detention room and it's all white and a little gray. Yeah. And it's like someone went to IKEA with a $37 budget and built this room. And even the most low budget room, even in Star Trek, is still, you know, tens of thousands of dollars in production quality that is inside there. So the believability of the space, you never are broken as consistently in Babylon 5 in DS9. Like you walk into a room, like, are you in a closet? Where are you?
We're actually in a hot tub factory with a bunch of blankets that they just put up over places.
Right. That seems appropriate.
And I, you know, I definitely get sort of defensive on Babylon 5's part, but Mike's heard me make this exact comment multiple times. We've listened to the director's commentaries and read stuff by J. Michael Straczynski, the showrunner who created it, which sadly compared to Star Trek drop off as the DVDs keep going because the same thing, budget constraints, like they only pay for a couple behind the scenes. So there's tons of written words he said, but not as much spoken, you know, commentaries. And, you know, there are a billion Star Trek podcast commentaries by the cast and crew. Mm-hmm. But JMS himself, when we're listening to audio tracks, I want to say like in 98, 99 on these episodes, is saying the exact same stuff. I wanted this room to look like this. They were only able to do this because of size constraints, whatever. I hate how it looks. I can see that and that. People say it doesn't matter. And then the second we talk to major sci-fi nerds, major artists, Mike has a bunch of friends that have been on the show that know that. It's, yeah, a little bit of proficiency. People start nailing it. One of our prior guests, 8, was a set designer and was literally like, oh yeah, I recognize those cheap things from the Warner Brothers thing. So like all the stuff you're saying does track.
Yeah. And that's the challenge, right? Like I recognize that probably the core of the story and the universe actually probably has some really good meat on its bones. But sometimes the delivery of it feels like someone's reading a Wikipedia page to someone, or someone in freshman college, you know, script writing had a shot at some of these scenes that are just so, you know, breadcrumby in terms of the way they're going to do. And if we're talking in a similar era, in a different medium, the video game Wing Commander, which was a really popular game, Wing Commander 3, which was produced by Chris Roberts, he owned the whole grouping of stuff. Wing Commander 3 and 4 starred Mark Hamill as a major character, and it was one of the earliest full motion video games.
Yeah, I remember the campaign when that was coming out. They were like really pushing that.
Yeah, and so Wing Commander 3 did a lot of blue screen, and Wing Commander 4 used a lot of set. And the spaceship that they use, that's like the 4 or 5 Rangers that are pursuing the Mimbari, looks like, of course, it all looks like a set, but the screens are little computer console screens. There's no lights on them.
Yeah.
But it is the same kind of production quality that video game had. It could probably, with that set, blend right into that space. So, you know, even for the video game, the Chris Roberts Wing Commander series later went on to go get flipped into a movie with Freddie Prinze Jr.
I rented that. I've seen that movie. Was Freddie Prinze, wasn't it Matthew Lillard too?
Matthew Lillard in that one. And then there was one other guy who, one of the big famous French accented guys, I can't remember who was in there as well. And so, you know, they thought they were going to kind of launch that in there. So sci-fi is known to have its own level of camp, right? Like it's, you know, even the original Star Trek, it's like cardboard walls and simplicity if the stories are compelling. And I think that's Babylon 5, I think, does get better as the seasons go on, as they get past this level of continuing to try and introduce all their species at once. And maybe that's where Star Trek succeeded, is that like they predominantly were a human crew with a Vulcan, and then they could have the alien of the week get introduced, or the conflict problem of the week. And within, you know, minutes, Babylon 5 has to introduce numerous species, each with thousands of years of backstory, and not belittle them to a sophomoric level of sophistication, but make it accessible to what was then a TV show that if you missed an episode, you missed it. There was no way to get that again unless it was syndication or whatever. And then you were just kind of out of luck. So there was, compared to like DS9, which was also in the same vein of some standalones and some, you know, continuous long 3, 4, 5 episode arcs, it becomes a challenge back then. Nowadays, though, it would be much easier.
Yeah, because nowadays everything is like TiVo'd for us all the time and on streaming and on demand everywhere. So it's pretty easy to catch up. But yeah, all you had before was hope that your friend saw that episode you missed so he can relay the plot to you.
And there was no Wikipedia, right? There was no area to go and get a synopsis of what it was. You just had to kind of, from context clues.
I think I'll jump in there. This is what Mike was saying. This was one of the earliest parts of kind of early nerd culture on the internet was the Lurker's Guide. The Lurker's Guide was a website, like a forum with people sharing theories. It's still archived, so we can
was
still...
Was it GeoCities or Angel Fire?
Yeah, one of those, right?
Neither of those, but those were the other two big popular things. It was those two things and the Lurker's Guide to Babylon 5, the entire internet. Oh, well, lots of porn too, but come on.
Yeah, always. That's what makes the internet go round. But yeah, so there was that and you could kind of see it. And we even noted that it was this weird point of it predated how much that's become, where nowadays a lot of things that happen behind the scenes drama on the show would not have been possible to happen in part because of what Babylon 5 started. And I do wonder with what you're saying, like modern era with television shows and being a purist, I've had exactly what you've had happen where I want to watch the whole thing, but I just don't have it in me. But nowadays, Babylon 5 included, you can find an hour or two video of someone that goes through everything. And I wound up doing that with Suits. I was enjoying Suits. I went, I cannot keep watching this. And luckily someone's, I'm going to break down what happened. So I think there was one on the television show Crusade on what happened there. And I need to check that out at some point.
Yeah, I have not delved into Crusade, but there was definitely a lot more plans to build that whole series out that just never came to fruition.
And for perspective, Ryan, Crusade was a spinoff show. They were hoping to be like the next one after this. I think it has 8 or 9 episodes. It has a ridiculously stacked cast. It has Bill Lumberg from Office Space.
Yeah, Gary Cole is the main captain.
Yeah, it has a Jin from Lost. I have not been able to make it through that show. And it is a canceled mid-season show with 8 or 9 episodes. And I've had the exact same experience you've had, Ryan, where I'm like, I'm going to watch this. And I can't. It's that bad. So anybody out there, we will not be checking out Crusade, even as a lark, even as a Gray 17 mic, but it's that bad.
This looks like it was in the vein of the Andromeda show that was like from the mind of Gene Roddenberry. They came out with Andromeda, which didn't last real long either, with Kevin Sorbo.
Oh, that's that's, man, what a dated set of words there. Although to stay here very briefly, just for, you know, since we're at the end of season 4, what amuses me, Mike, in our lore is we've had a few times Jakar in season 1 and now the Grey Council saying we're going to make this arduous trip to Zahadum. It's dangerous. It's going to take a long time, etc. And in the 4 seasons of the show, Ryan, in particular season 3 and 4, there are like 4 episodes where people just take a day trip to Zahadum. Yeah.
Once they get the waypoint on their map, they're good.
They have so many weird sex rituals in Mimbar.
And that's not even a joke, Ryan, like in show lore that pops up all the time. But then it's a very PG-ish show, so it's almost hilarious how it's
told. Yeah, just chaste hand-holding, but they do it in the most explicit way.
I'd give 2, like to what you just said, Mike, there are 2 good metaphors. And you had one of them in our notes where you brought up like the Han Solo point to a thing that happens.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, the movie Han Solo came out and I've heard that the original version could have been very interesting. And right, those people went off and made the Lego movie. So maybe could have let him keep it funny. And I've heard some enjoyable parts, but you know, parts of that movie are like, why is he named Solo? Because he was alone and a guy called him Solo. And you're like, okay, why did you,
it's that nerd sort of thing. Yeah, like, I thought it was a good movie, and I thought it would have been a better movie if it could have just been a standalone sci-fi adventure as opposed to the Han Solo story. But
yeah,
I'm not a huge Star Wars guy.
But So we basically had that with the Babylon 5 movie that we're going to explain all this stuff. And as we just noted, coming through watching the first 4 seasons, it's even with flashbacks and explanations, that's done pretty well in the show. So when they're like, I bet you're wondering how this happened, it's well, no, because that character that's on screen now talking a lot, there's an episode where they're on screen talking a lot, and it's basically the same thing. And the special effects and costumes are better in this one than that one, but I got the gist. So what I'll throw out, by the way, Ryan, when we're talking about like this movie being very Han Solo member Barry-ish, when he gives the kid a wish, he's, you did better than I did. The Dilgar War is a thing that they referenced. Actually, you would have seen it. It was on season 1. There's a Cat Lady episode, which we did an episode on, which was great. a lot of these are callbacks, you know, the one third, the Minbari being three casts and people saying a third, that's like a running bit that feels in the future of just being like, remember that from the show? Aren't you proud you recognize it? And you're like, neat.
I mean, I do like your kind of Han Solo idea, right? That the, well, not Han Solo specifically, but that idea is you need to get your characters to where the show starts, right? So anything that happens to them either needs to fill in a gap, which is fine, but also needs to reboot, you know? And so like, Rogue One had the challenge, right? And there's a new Lord of the Rings movie called The Hunt for Gollum is going to do some of this same stuff. That's a prequel to, you know, the between the Hobbit and the Fellowship of the Ring. And so it's got to like put stuff in there. And when you give characters these insights, you know, even the Star Wars universe has it with Clone Wars and Ahsoka and all of these other things, the magic and mystery and awesomeness of Luke ends up being diminished by realizing like, oh, there's 50 Jedi wandering around the universe after the purge. Luke's significance is less significant when you get to see the entire tapestry. And so this is that same challenge where when they go back and you see some of the earring things and some of those little nods, some of them are nice.
Yeah.
But other times it is hard for characters to be like, oh, nice to meet you. You know, the Obi-Wan and Anakin in episode one introduction kind of thing.
Yeah. It's like the classic thing with prequels. Like, how do you write a good, enticing prequel to something if it's a story you know exactly where it's going to end up? There's very few, like, very satisfying ways to do that because you have to figure out, it has to be some story that it comes from within the characters in that moment that you didn't know about, and the plot really doesn't matter in the end because, you know.
So what you do is you go into the future and you tell a prequel with a story instead of an actual recounting of actual events.
Perfect. No notes. And by the way, just to end on that note, what does kill me is the place that did this perfectly, which is wild, and I can't believe it, was young Sheldon. That's one of the few like prequel-y things that I feel worked effectively, and the inconsistent narrator helped. Yeah, so like, you can young Sheldon it, which is bizarre for me to say. Oh,
I didn't see young Sheldon, but I would say Transformers 1, the recent cartoon, did a really good job in a prequel.
Pretty much the young Sheldon of robot movies, I think we can all agree.
Yeah, we can combine them. Robot Sheldon.
All right. Now, since we're already at the absurdity of all of us knew each other before the show started, even though us meeting each other and getting to know each other is a huge part of the show,
yeah,
let's ratchet it up to 11.
Dre immediately followed through on his promise of ratcheting up to 11 by fully rolking out and abruptly ending the Zoom call. It was awesome. Remember to rate, review, and subscribe wherever you get the show. And if you have a friend who is interested in Babylon 5, tell them about our show and say, hey, you got something you can watch along with. Next week, we present to you
the Babylon 5 Season 5 Blitzcast.
Cheers, all.
First question is buzzer practice. What is your favorite color?
Ryan.
Yes.
Blue.
Blue is correct. I would also accept blue, no wait, and... Okay. Category the first.